Welcome to the RPA Edge podcast. This is Fred Barstein, contributing editor, where I bring industry's most innovative and creative people. And today I'm delighted to have Dick Darien. Dick is the founder and CEO at the Wise Rhino Group, which is by far the best name of any company in our industry. Before that, he had headed up the DCIO efforts at BlackRock, was a principal at NRP, which turned into a GRP. And before that, had worked at MFS and a company that, and being part of Voya. So a great history on the record keeping and the investment side. And now is the leading M&A and advisory group for RPA firms. So with all of that, welcome, Dick.
Fred, great to be here.
So what I'd like to talk to you about is we know that RPAs, retirement plan advisors, and especially aggregators are focused on the wealth management industry. You know, create a cap trust has really been focused for the last 5 years on that, with 70% of their acquisitions in the wealth management space. But today I'd like to raise the question is, should RIAs and traditional wealth managers start looking at 401k and 403b plans as a way to find wealth management and financial planning clients, even if they don't intend to be RPA specialists? So is that a real opportunity? Is that something they should be looking at, Dick? And if so, why?
Yeah, Fred. So the answer is yes. And you know, I think we should go back to the RPA space for a second, and let's just kind of understand what's happening there. And I think, you know, one of the slower processes in our business and the financial services is all the practitioners and all the firms putting their heads up and looking to say, what's going on out there? I mean, there's enough to do just to get your own business and execute well, but what are the things outside of your walls that are happening that impact my business? So Fred, real quickly, if you look at the, call it the $10 trillion, you know, 600,000 plan stack that you know, RPAs are focused on and national investment consulting firms are focused on, you know, the changes that have gone on there have been dramatic. And, you know, those changes include the plan sponsor changing, meaning plan sponsors are focused for years on getting plan design right. And getting kind of the plan level things right. And Fred, for the most part, they've done that. And so the plan sponsor is beginning to focus more on, okay, we've got the plan right. We know the investments are what they should be. We know the design is right. Let's focus down on the participant now. Let's do a better job of kind of, there's the two words, financial wellness, whatever that is. But what it means to a plan sponsor, and when I say plan sponsor, I'm talking about the benefits person and the CFO, is let's make sure this person is focused on their job. Let's care enough about them to kind of have them do that, but also let's get them to retirement at the right time. And that's become more and more important, especially the CFO, who cares, you know, not only about the employees, but frankly, his job every day is to look at costs, look at revenue, look at profitability. And they're thinking about benefit costs for people who work too long and also looking at productivity costs. So you've got that shift going on with the employer. You also have a significant gap in the workplace of advice being given. For all these years, Fred, participants still don't know what to do. And, you know, at least as an issue, we've evolved to a point where there's more solutions versus going out and trying to educate people, but there's still a huge advice gap. So kind of that's kind of the dynamic of the buyer. If you think about the advisor, the wealth advisor, and if they look at that $10 trillion pool as say a reservoir, that reservoir has been full for many years. About 15% of the water has come out every year, Fred, into IRA rollovers. And they're kind of sitting there catching the spill, right? And it's gone great. That's kind of the way they've built their businesses. They talk to their clients. They're getting all that money. And that's probably over $1 trillion a year. So the question becomes, what would happen if, you know, the 164 million working Americans who are about 75%, Fred, are covered, or about 123 million by a retirement plan, and there's about 100 million participants. And by the way, Fred, there'll be more of those, as you know, as there's more state and federal mandates to get them covered. What happens if suddenly there was an effective technology and people-driven effort to get to the individuals in plan, to provide them in plan advice, to build relationships in plan, mostly with, I'm talking employees top to bottom, but mostly with the high net worth and upper end of the mass affluent. What impact would that have, Fred, on the pipe? You know, that 15% spilling over? And will, if that leakage begins to dry up a little bit, and by the way, Fred, combined with plan sponsors and participants more and more leaving the money in there anyway, you know, as you know, there's a big push to do that. What impact would that have on the current beneficiaries of that flow, which are the wealth advisors? So right. If you stop there for a second, those advisors need to care about retirement plans, because I would argue that as these retirement aggregators get more advanced in their ability to engage participants, if they're able to put technology in place, and as they add wealth capabilities, you know, you could begin to see an impact on how individuals choose their advisor.
Right. So that's sort of the threat. But in terms of the opportunity, are you seeing, are any of the RPAs able to actually find traditional wealth management financial planning clients? I know that, you know, we have 100 million or so participants, and we got wellness and digital and all of that, but it's still hard to make money on that $50,000 account balance. But are you seeing RPAs actually finding wealth management and being able to leverage that relationship as the plan advisor to get?
Yeah, Fred, absolutely. In fact, if you look at, we've been a part of 66 transactions in the first 3.5 years. And I would say the surprise is that, especially the last year, that more and more of the quote unquote retirement advisory firms, and when I say that, they're really double majors now, Fred. They major in retirement, and they're probably either a double major, retirement and wealth, or, you know, major in retirement and minor in wealth. And I would say that we're seeing at least 50% of the transactions with retirement firms with more than 50% of their revenue coming from the wealth side. And that's a function of their ability to engage the individual. And a lot of that, Fred, is not even a strategy. It starts out opportunistically. It's all the things we just talked about. It's the plan sponsor. And keep in mind, these retirement advisors, Fred, have, you know, probably arguably the best relationship in the C-suite. They're talking about all the plan level things. The plan sponsor more and more is saying, what about the participant? How can you help? And they're engaged in the C-suite. And frankly, they're starting to get the C-suite wealth advisory business because they built that capability. And the question is, as they institutionalize that and go across all participants, how do they go from, you know, a little bit of a trickle, I'd say, opportunistically, they built multiple millions in revenue. How do they really blow that out? And if you look at the calculations, we represented Aqualine in the acquisition of SageView. And one of the things we talked about with Aqualine was, how do you put a price on a participant in terms of ultimate monetization? And Brad and Grant Ahrens have done a lot of good work here at Intellisense around understanding kind of how do you help a participant and what's the value there. And Fred, it's through the roof. If you look at all the things that participants' employee needs, it's there. So bring it back to your question, the opportunities there, I would say, you know, Fred, and I see this in my own business, when you have a kind of a systematic level trend or push, you know, the plan sponsor in a direction, it makes it a lot easier to execute. What these aggregators need to do now is essentially figure out how to take that opportunistic growth and turn it into a strategic tech people hybrid driven approach. And the firm that's really come closest to doing that, Fred, is CapTrust.
Right. And you know, the other thing with DC plans is you have the trust of the participants because you've been endorsed by the employer who says, we've done a search and we think this is a good advisor. And for many people, that's the only advisor they're ever going to meet.
90+ percent, Fred. And for the folks in the C-suite and the management team who might have more assets in the plan and probably have other household assets, what these firms are beginning to do is they're putting together financial plans and call it a financial plan meets gap analysis, because they're doing it more from a retirement perspective, maybe bringing in Social Security. And it's a very institutional process, Fred. Keep in mind that they've advised the investment committee for years. So they actually are in many ways better suited to take that institutional process and deliver it down to the participant level. So yes, the endorsement, the fact that they're starting with the plan. And what these aggregators are hoping for, and it's happening, is having that moment, since they have an endorsed meeting, they've got those annual reviews with an individual who says, I love what you're doing with my plan. I've got an account with Merrill. Can you help me with that too? And I think that's what's happening. The question is, can you take that and turn it into a systematized process?
And certainly it doesn't hurt that everybody's now comfortable doing virtual and being able to meet on Zoom so you can get to more participants where they want to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious about what your thoughts are and what you've heard in the industry about that creative planning deal. You know, explain it and explain, if you can, why a creative planning bought the, you know, $110 billion of retirement assets plans from Lockton, which is mostly a benefits and P&C, and what implications that has to the RIA and the wealth management world.
Yeah, Fred, I would first go over to the institutional, the national consulting firms, the Mercers and Aons, and say that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they reached a similar point in their business where they really, through need, had to pivot from providing design and the traditional consulting services to over to OCIO, outsourced CIO business, and that's become their core service. And as that happened, Fred, you saw players in the marketplace kind of face that moment where they say, is this what we need to do? Do we have the strategic will to move forward? And that's when you saw the acceleration of M&A and, you know, where it became today, we've got Mercer and Aon who have, gosh, I mean, combined trillions of dollars. So that, you know, number one is it's happened before. Number two is, if you look at kind of step one with these quote unquote retirement wealth aggregators, Fred, step one was to build a scale business. And there's probably 15 to 20 scaled retirement wealth aggregators. But the next step was, okay, we've done this. We're at 50 to 100 million in retirement revenue. We now know we have to be able to bring in wealth business and we have to engage the participant. That's going to be where it's at. And Fred, that's not a want, it's a need. The need part says that just like Mercer and Aon, plan sponsors have commoditized to some extent the consulting side. I mentioned before that they're not that they're done at the plan level, but they've done most of the things they need to do. They're now focused on the participant and they're asking, what can you do for me there? So if you're a Lockton, you're probably sitting there saying, look, we're primarily a benefits P&C and a personal lines business. Do we want to go out and acquire and build a whole new vertical and combine it with retirement? Or are we at a point where, you know, we've kind of reached our moment. And look, I know a little bit about what they did, but that was a move that some expected, and you know, it was Fisher Cut Bait, and they sold or partnered with Creative Planning, and now you have two firms that one focuses primarily in wealth, one focuses in retirement. You know, I think they essentially sold the business, but you're going to see other firms, Fred, kind of reach the same point, and that will do nothing but accelerate the opportunity, but also put more pressure on firms who aren't doing that, who aren't combining retirement and wealth.
But take us through the thinking of creative planning, because that was the first time we saw a major wealth management RIA make an investment in the RPA. Before that, they were like, oh, that's a terrible business, low margins, lots of liability, lots of people that don't have money that I don't want to talk to. Creative planning to me shook things up with this and maybe is forcing wealth managers and RAs to look differently. What did they see?
Fred, I think it started, again, this is just my guess looking at the market. General Atlantic. General Atlantic is a private equity firm that, to my knowledge, was a player in both the CapTrust recap in June of 2020 and also was a player looking at SageView. So they were two times a bridesmaid, but they understood the retirement business. They then became an investor in Creative Planning. So I think that their knowledge of the CapTrust model, where CapTrust now has, you know, approaching $1 trillion in AUA, and about 90% of that is institutional assets, yet more than 50% of the revenue and EBITDA is wealth. They understand that the power of using the institutional platform to engage the individual. So I think that was General Atlantic kind of talking to the leadership at Creative Planning, saying, this is the direction we need to go in. And, you know, it's really, really, you know, it's just fascinating, you know, the kind of the cliche 1 + 1 = 4. That is literally the case, I think, with Locked and Creative Planning coming together. You have you have the experts on the wealth side. You've got the retirement experts. You build the tech and people bridge, and you don't have to do the extra step that CapTrust went through, which has been, you know, close to 30 acquisitions of wealth businesses going into their retirement offices. So they have that capability. So I would say, Fred, you're going to have, and I don't think it's, again, I don't think it's a want. I think it's going to be a need. If you're a retirement platform and you want to continue to grow and thrive, you're going to have to figure out how to build out a wealth business. And you're going to have to figure out a way to connect them. And then to your point earlier, absolutely, if you're a wealth advisor today, I think that you don't want to just focus on that single vertical of firms that are stacking wealth businesses together, firms that are scaling through just acquiring. I think you want to consider kind of that second vertical, which is a combination of retirement and wealth. Where you've got 100 million individuals who have significant assets, ultimately becoming wealth clients through those relationships. Right.
Let's turn a little bit to the record keepers who now, and have some of them have been, but many of them are turning now to, I want to engage and service the participants, you know, led by Fidelity, Schwab, and Vanguard for sure. And Vanguard and Schwab have the largest robo-advisors. It's a hybrid. Yeah. And then you combine that with there might be more assets staying in the plan because of the DOL, you know, I'll quote, it's the 2020-02 prohibited transaction exemption, which is really... forces anyone doing a rollover, any advisor who's recommending a rollover, even if it's the first time that their relationship they have with that investor, must look at the best interest. So that means they have to look at, you know, is it make sense for them to roll over? And then the, you know, more and more plan sponsors are looking to retain assets and actually do retirement income, which is another source of revenue for traditional RAs and wealth managers. How do you see that developing? Is that going to develop more? And is that a risk to the traditional RA and wealth manager who's making their money off the rollover's retirement income?
You know, Fred, there's a limited pool, right? So, you know, you have people and assets, and although it's growing, it is what it is. And record keepers certainly have a certain advantage in terms of data and positioning, and certainly Fidelity and Power, Schwab, Vanguard, others you mentioned, have been able to, and I'll focus on Fidelity, have been able to do the things that they need to do to engage the participant. And Fidelity's had the most success on the rollover side. I think all of those firms now, because they're not making the money on the record keeping side, are looking at, and frankly, we're forced not, they're not really making the money institutionally, Fred, on the asset management side, where their destiny lies is engaged in the participant. Certainly Empower sits there. So it's a little bit of an uncomfortable, you know, strange bedfellows, uncomfortable situation out there. We have, you know, you have these larger firms coexisting with each other, both eyeing the individual participant. So I think that's a dynamic that will continue. For me, I think about I started as an advisor in this business. Go back, you know, focus on the best and highest purpose of each of the organizations. I think that most plan sponsors would recognize, you know, a scaled retirement advisory firm with wealth business is probably better position to provide advice than a record keeper. Although Fred, who knows? Because Empower acquire a cap trust? You just don't know where that's going to go. But there's no doubt that both record keepers, you know, look at Edelman Financial Engines as an organization. You look at and retirement advisors. All these firms recognize that engaging the participant in plan is a home field advantage. It heads off wealth advisors at the pass. It gives you great opportunities to then take over broader wealth advisory business. And again, going back to the theme, Fred, it's something that all wealth advisors want to get familiar with. You know, I working at BlackRock for 8 years, Larry Fink always said, be a student of the market. I would recommend wealth advisors out there listening, understand the dynamic there and understand how you can take advantage of it. But absolutely, that's going to be a competitive situation. Fred, you and I have talked for years about the consolidation curve, you know, the academic research. And what that research says is at the end, when you reach kind of oligopoly, you know, fewer larger firms, there tends to be more cooperation. So it remains to be seen how will a CapTrust and Empower work together. What it could be, Fred, is that CapTrust takes high net worth and upper end of mass affluent, and Empower takes the smaller stuff. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. The one thing that is interesting is Empower has all the technology, and to build out the tech and the connectivity to part services is going to be hard.
And to your point, Empower, about a year and a half ago, bought Personal Capital for $1 billion. And that was certainly for that reason. So final question for you, Dick. Assuming the RPAs and the wealth managers don't necessarily want to become RPA specialists, what could they do? And just to me, and maybe because I know the RPA world so much, it seems like it's easier to outsource and do the plan design than the institutional by partnering with firms or using record keepers than it is to do for an RPA to learn the wealth management advice business. So in some ways, the wealth managers and RIAs are better positioned. So what should the wealth managers and RIAs do, assuming they don't want to become an expert?
Yeah, Fred, I think it's a couple of things. So one is, and I think you can kind of look at situations, and I would start not at the end, but if a firm is looking to sell its business, that's obviously what we do for a living, Fred. If you're a wealth advisory firm, what you want to do is begin to look beyond just the wealth vertical and look over at the retirement and wealth vertical. It is an absolute greenfield. It's a little different, but you know, there's huge demand for wealth acumen. There's huge demand for wealth regionally. So that's number one. Kind of expand your world, and any firm that's representing you should show you both sides. Number two, Fred, I would say in your backyard, and part of this is data, and these things happen all the time, there are retirement advisory firms and there are wealth advisory firms. Some know each other, some don't. You know, it is a little bit of magic if you can identify who those firms are and begin to think, well, hey, if we were under the same roof doing it together, we could thrive. And that's definitely kind of a small scale 1 + 1 = 4. So, Fred, I think there's an opportunity to do that. And the only holding back is desire and kind of imagination and, frankly, someone to help and data. Certainly Informa and other organizations can help in that direction. I would say number three is understanding what we're talking about today and the dynamic and becoming fluent in what's happening. Because what we see today, Fred's going to change. You know, we don't know the next two or three giant deals that'll happen that'll change the landscape. So I think you pay attention and then you say, how does this impact me? And anyway, those are three of the things I would think about.
Sure. And we've seen benefit firms that have bought the RPA aggregators, you know, with Hub International and One Digital. And I've been surprised by the amount of cross-selling that is actually happening. You know, usually I'm very skeptical when they say, oh, we're going to cross-sell and the benefit. I think that wealth managers and RPAs together, you know, could really benefit and cross-sell. And you already have an established wealth management business who can get the 5 to 10% of the participants in an RPA's business. The other thing, too, is, you know, there are things called pooled employer plans, multiple employer plans that, you know, make it really easy for an RIA to just put the plan, outsource all the fiduciary, all of the plan design and investments, and really focus on the wealth manager. So I think there's a lot of things, technology, but also regulations that are happening to make this easier for wealth managers who don't really want to become a specialist, hire people, you know, for this area on that. So I think I've come to all the end of my questions. Any final comments and things, words of wisdom maybe to RPAs looking to partner with wealth managers or wealth managers looking to partner with RPAs?
Yeah, Fred, I said it a couple of minutes ago. I think be a student of the market, number one. Number two, kind of expand your horizons, your imagination to understand, to take what you've learned out there as you look at things. And then I would just look closely. You know, you mentioned the insurance brokerage firms. Fred, we could spend another 2 hours of a podcast talking about those opportunities and, you know, even like personal lines within insurance brokerage, which is, you know, selling insurance to individuals. I mean, so I think you want to pay attention and I think you want to just understand how it affects your business, but also on the kind of on the offensive, Fred, say, what can we be doing to you know, change our business to take advantage of these dynamics.
Great. Well, thank you, Dick. Thanks to Wise Rhino. Congratulations on all your success with 66 deals in three years. That's quite amazing. And I know that just as the RPA aggregators are looking to expand into the wealth management, I know Wise Rhino was probably looking over into that as a potential greenfield for you as well. So good luck with that. And thank you all. This is Fred Barstein, contributing editor for RPA Edge. Thank you for listening to our RPA Edge podcast. And thank you, Dick, for all your wise words of wisdom.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.